This week has been dedicated more or less to the topic of deity worship, not by design, but that's the way it seems to have come out. And yesterday, or day before, I spoke on Kalavati's question about the importance of deity worship, and I'll continue to answer the question that you raised here, which began by tell us why deity worship is so important. And aside from the fact that direct service to Lord Krishna is our constitutional position, we should see that worship of the Lord's deity form is an important aspect of sadhana bhakti archana, by which we become free from material attachments. In other words, it's a process of purification. But on over and above the purification, deity worship also gives us a very direct contact with the Lord's form, and that helps cement within us the concept that Krishna is a person, that he has a transcendental form, and that serving him means very personal types of loving interaction, such as dressing, feeding, putting to rest, waking up, offering aarti. And of course, when you do this, then you're naturally reminded, well, but this is what I do with my children, this is what I do with my loved ones. And yes, it's a fact, that is what we do with family members and those who are near and dear, and we do that because that is a perverted reflection of this original personal service, which is the personal service to Krishna. Therefore, Shastra recommends that we make Krishna our friend, that we make him our son, that we make him our father, and that the propensity to render such personal service be directed to him. I think everyone has experience of, especially little girls, even at the age of 2-3 years old, they have a tendency to play with dolls, to dress dolls. Their maternal nature, their instinctively manifests, and they want to do this type of personal seva. The original form of that service is dormant within everyone's heart because we're Nitya Krishna Das. So if we're eternal servants of Krishna, then from that it's understood that we also have eternal service. And that eternal service is reflected in the worship of the Lord's deity form. Deity worship is especially recommended for householders because they're always engaged in serving and worshiping their family members. Therefore, in order to balance that tendency for service, which is not our permanent situation, one engages in our eternal type of service, the service which is service to the deity of the Lord. Therefore, in all homes, the deity should be the central personality, should be the focus of all activities, the personality for whom we do shopping, for whom we clean the home, for whom we have a home, and who we worship together regularly, morning and evening. And why are there different forms of the deity made of different elements, metals, etc.? Because all of these elements are Krishna's energy, a manifestation of his transcendental potencies via the media of his external energy, and therefore their best use is in manifesting his transcendental form. There's also, of course, practical reasons why different material elements are used for making the Lord's form in places where marble is in abundance, then there will be marble forms of the Lord. In places where there aren't stone or that type of solid things, then the Lord's form may be made out of wood, as in the case, for instance, to make out of neem wood, Gornitai deities in Bengal. And where it's possible, then they also make out of metals, casting different metals together. Generally, bronze predominates, or brass predominates these deities. Sometimes for those who are extremely wealthy, deities can be made out of jewels, and those who are very poor, deities can be conceived of in the mind. So Shastra describes different types of deity forms. The gopis simply made the deity of Katyayani Devi out of the mud of the Jamuna. So what's practical? But the essence of deity worship is Yomi Bhaktya Priyachati, is the bhava, is the mood of devotion. And the deity becomes present, or you could use the word alive, to the degree that a devotee is alive by the devotion to serve his worshipable Lord. Now, Kalapati then asks, what deities are recommended for different ashrams? Well, certain deities are preferable for certain ashrams. I don't know that there is any hard and fast rule. For instance, sannyasis who are meant to be traveling, for them it's obviously very convenient to have Shalagram Shila, because they are small, not fragile, can easily be placed in a box or a little bag hung around the neck and taken from one place to the next. The same can't be said for larger deities, especially heavy deities. Radhakrishna deities are meant for opulent homes and or temples or king's palaces, because they need to be worshipped at a very high standard, as other deities such as Sitaram, Lakshman and Hanuman, or Lakshmi Narayan. But the recommended deity for all ashrams is Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, Parama Karuna Pahudvijana. Why are they recommended for everyone? Srila Prabhupada repeatedly emphasizes that Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda don't accept any kind of offense. That means that in Kali Yuga, our ability to worship according to standard is often compromised by circumstances, or maybe compromised by our lack of Krishna consciousness. Similarly, whereas other forms of deity worship require many upachara, many additional aspects and elements, ingredients of service, worship of Gornitai is not demanding at all. The most important thing in the worship of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda is to chant Hare Krishna. In other words, practicing the Yuga Dharma in their presence. Therefore, I always recommend devotees to worship Gornitai. When Grihasthas ask me, in fact, someone had just recently wrote me whether they could worship Radha Krishna deities, I just said no. Worship Gornitai. You never know what the future holds. Everyone's always enthusiastic to begin deity worship, but 20 years later is another story. And there are so many neglected deities in India. Why should we possibly add to the store of more neglected deities? Better that we worship Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, who are very happy to receive even the simplest standard, and simply want devotees to chant Hare Krishna. And if in the future we cannot guarantee any standard for them, by future I mean in the next life and the life after that, because once you begin worshipping deities, you have an obligation for them. Then then they're very forgiving. They take no offense. The last question is an important one, but one I think I've already answered earlier. Why is it that some deities need to be installed and some not? In one sense, the form of the Lord is the Lord, and therefore he's present and becomes even more present by the intensity of devotion with which he's worshipped. In order to emphasize that installation, in order to emphasize the presence of the Lord, a formality such as an installation ceremony is conducted for those of us who are not so advanced, and therefore that type of vidhi should generally be followed. But once deities are installed, then one becomes obliged to worship them according to the standard agreed upon at installation. And therefore, we always have installation ceremony of deities where we make a formal pact with the Lord that we will maintain the standard of deity worship. That becomes one of the essential ingredients of that installation. Why is it that, she says, Gornitai can be worshipped without being installed? For the same reason that I mentioned earlier, because they do not require a standard of puja to be maintained. They're happy to give their darshan, be dressed according to the ability of the honest devotee, and just hear the family chant Hare Krishna in front of them. But other deities are not like that, and therefore installation should be done. Of course, having said that, we shouldn't take advantage of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda's grace, and we should consider that even though they are very, very merciful, still they are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore we should try to maintain a certain standard of service for them, like at least dressing them on a weekly basis, offering them whatever food that we eat. But if one honestly cannot do that, then they're very forgiving. And that way it's sufficient simply to place them on the altar and chant Hare Krishna, and they're there. And as far as the potency of the deities reciprocate according to the devotion which is offered to them. And if you want to talk about the potency of deities, then it is that reciprocation which is their potency. They are fully potent, unlimitedly potent. But how much love we offer to them, to that degree, they will manifest their potency. So we should all consider ourselves so fortunate that we have such very kind and wonderful lords like Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, who allow us to serve them in such a informal, simple way, and yet at the same time they will give us the greatest benefit. They will give us love for Radha and Krishna. Therefore, it's always my recommendation to devotees, worship Gornitai and get the highest benefit. Sometimes devotees are uneasy with this, or they're restless, they want some more deities or other deities, and more often than not, that's due to restlessness, weakness of mind, not understanding the role of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Kali Yuga and his ability to give the topmost benefit to those who render minimum sincere service. We tend to, or at least neophytes, tend to equate long puja, exacting puja, detailed puja, with spiritual benefit. But yagyai sankirtana prayarya jantihi sumedasa. But devotees who are sumedasa, they know that if I simply chant Hare Krishna before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then all perfection will be achieved. Anyway, now I'm going to erase Kalavati's question and we'll continue with some other subject matters tomorrow. Hare Krishna.